artist just gives me, when I describe myself as an artist, it just gives me an opportunity to do whatever the fuck I want.
Artist, you're an artist.
Artist is vast.
Absolutely.
You're creative.
Yeah, creator, artist. Yeah. The tool I choose to use as my paintbrush is my basketball. Mm-hmm. I've done it in my backyard since I was 6 years old.
But when you're out there, are you thinking about the shit you're doing, or are you just doing it?
I am constantly crafting new canvases every time I grab that paintbrush, the ball. New canvas, new side on the court. It is literally just a hardwood floor with lines on it, but I disrespect those lines go outside those boundaries because it's meant to. It's meant to be tweaked.
And it's fun, right?
Absolutely.
Is it fun when you're losing? It's the
I was just telling him, there's like, do you guys have an assassin's oath?
What's that, Kai?
You just love being in the water full of sharks. The best of the best.
The man in the arena, just like always.
On that level. You just know everybody's a gladiator just like you.
Just like you.
Losing is the assassin's oath, like, of just, we don't want that.
Do you flail when you're, like, losing, or does something, like, kick in?
That was the latest episode of The Shop with Kyrie Irving, Idris Elba, and Drew Barrymore. Kyrie talking about he's an artist, the court is his canvas, and he's constantly just creating. And then you heard Idris bring up, hey, but is it that when you're losing? Kind of stopped him dead in his tracks. And he kind of danced around it with this assassin's oath. But I thought it was a very poignant moment for him to bring that up. Like, okay, is it just art, or how competitive are you actually? Or is it more just about the style of your play rather than winning the game? And Kyrie, man, to his credit, he's a charming cat. You know, I could see where people really fall for the act or get intrigued with, obviously his talent speaks for itself, but then, you know, when he doesn't get too woo-woo, he's well-spoken and he's charming. I think it's his actions that contradict some of that, and where he kind of falls out of favor, you know, it's a different story. But again, catch that on YouTube, The Shop, highly recommend it. It's Monday, September 12th, and this is High Volume Shooter.
This guy at all times. There he is again. How about three in a row? Going deep. Bang. That was cold. What it?
Another three.
No! No!
This is going to be a quick episode here, as there hasn't been a whole lot of basketball news. What did we have? The Philadelphia 76ers have signed Montrezl Harrell. It didn't make a whole lot of news. He was arrested in Charlotte. Remember, he ended up in Charlotte last year. He was in Washington after the Laker deal, right, with Russ, and they shipped him to Charlotte. And then in the offseason, he was arrested with quite a bit of weed on him, like a felony amount of weed, right? A couple pounds or something in a car. I don't understand when you're that rich. But anyway, you know, I think that this is Daryl Morey's blind spot. It's the human element. It seems like he doesn't really take into account personalities or the perception of things, right? Because Trez has really been a locker room problem in every place he's been. It's true. Like, he's just a guy who always thinks he should have the ball more and have a bigger role. That's really the issue, I think. I don't think it's necessarily that he doesn't get along with teammates. It's that he always feels like he should have a bigger role, and he's not willing to accept kind of that sixth or seventh man role. And apparently Harden was like, yeah, bring him in. And so now he's a part of this revamped Sixers team, which on paper, very intriguing. I don't think Morey pays enough attention to the culture and character of his acquisitions, where you look at the Warriors and all the success that we've had, and he's so desperate to chase that down, yet he neglects a huge aspect of what this Warriors organization does when it comes to prioritizing character and locker room fit. I was scrolling through Twitter last week, and the Warriors feed, it was the official Golden State Warriors Twitter, had some footage of Kuminga in the gym putting in that summer work. You notice ever since the Stephen A. thing came out about him not doing what he's supposed to do, Kuminga has been, you know, there's been footage of him practicing and in gyms. So good. Cool. But what happened was they had this phantom cam. They had like legit slow-mo footage. You know, I can slow down footage. You know, anybody can slow down footage. But if you take it at a super high frame rate, phantom cam, now you can really see frame by frame. And they had this really slow up close footage of Kuminga, a couple jumpers from him. And I tweeted, can't front, mechanics don't look great. And you know, that's what it is. That's what it is, right? And look, the shit doesn't have to look good, right? It doesn't have to be pretty. You don't have to have this textbook jumper, but there are some non-negotiables when it comes to shooting well. And it seems like Kuminga is breaking a few of those. If you look at his eyes and his head, pause, he tracks the ball, it seems like, at different times. So everybody at a certain point tracks the ball with their eyes once they've released it. And when you watch Kuminga, it seems like it's late. His head, he'll release it, and then his head will jolt up, and you'll see his eyes go to find the ball. And it's just, it's not congruent. It's something off with that, and you don't want your head jerking at a different times after. It just seems weird. I've pointed out the wrist flexion or lack thereof, and then there kind of seems to be a jolt at the end and maybe a little bit of a side flick. So there's a lot. There's a lot going on, man. The simplest way to put it really is the shot smooth? You know, like, because I know this is a podcast, we don't have the visuals, but you can go again, Golden State Warriors Twitter, or you'll find it. I'll even post a link here on the Patreon to this for it, so you can go look at the footage of it, right? But really, in the simplest terms, is it smooth? Never mind the set point or release point. There are a lot of funkier looking shots that go in, but as funky as they may be mechanically, usually they're smooth, meaning like the transfer of energy, there's no hitch, right? It could be funky where it comes from the hip or above the head, right? But is it kind of smooth? And the problem with Kuminga is it just doesn't look smooth right now. And just thinking about his game and some of his mechanics, I think that he is someone who was never really shown fundamentals. Obviously, coming from where he came from, he probably learned basketball on YouTube, right? And he just mimicked the fundamentals. It's like, you know, a lot of kids, younger dudes, will walk with a G limp. They try to kind of walk like they're a G, like they're a gangster. But there's no denying that specific prison posture. You can immediately tell a cat who's done some time, right? It's different. It's different, right? And it's the same thing with the jumper. You can immediately tell the ones that have really put in the time. In a lot of ways, this is what is intriguing about Kuminga. He is this raw. It's all just mimicked fundamentals. Because like he's never, like most of these American-born players, at 9 or 10 years old, they were on their little junior team or whatever their youth team, and some coach, some dad was like, hey, elbow in, hands here, right? You know what I mean? I don't think Kuminga had that. I think it was all, and so there's some funky stuff to that jumper, and that's the one area, because a lot of this stuff is, he's so raw, you're like, imagine when he gets coached up. Imagine when he has actual good footwork, and it's not just innate, right? He does have decent footwork just innately, but you know what I'm saying? Part of his potential and ceiling being so high is the fact that you could tell he hasn't really been coached up. But I think that the jumper is the one area that you don't like that. But again, it ain't got to be pretty, but it's got to change. He can't just stick to this form and it's going to like get to where he wants it to go. And so that's where you hear a little about the attitude and the ego could hurt that. Is he willing to take a step back and alter that form? And before you say, well, of course, right? Because it's like logically a normal person. We're sitting here, you know, you say, okay, you sit down this young NBA player and you say, well, listen, if you're willing to change your form on your shot and put in this work, you're going to be an all-star. You're going to be a star, man. You just got to alter this shot. The common person would assume, all right, well, that's what you got to do. You got to do it, right? Duh, right? Well, you remember Eric Paschal? Never did it. Now, is he still in the league? Is he still in Utah? They probably want to keep him around now for the tank job. One would assume these guys are going to do what they need to do to get better and eventually get that big bag, but it's not a given. I also heard people say, you know, Kawhi. It looks like Kawhi is a little bit. And there's a lot of similarities. I pointed that out in the summer league. Kawhi is definitely the blueprint for Kuminga right now. Here's the thing. The further away you step from the basket, the bigger the holes in your shot become. you have little leaks of energy in your shot, you know, from it could be your feet, your base, your set point, your release, whatever it is, the leaks of energy become more apparent the further you step away from the basket as a shooter. That's in part why I think his mid-range game looks better than anything else right now as far as his jumper goes, and that's where Kawhi was. Now, Kawhi, you hear the stories of the Spurs changed his shot early in his career. Chip England is the shot whisperer for the Spurs. I actually made a similar tweak to what Kawhi did, is where he used to cock the ball way back behind his head, and it's just the margin of error is greater, right? And so now he shoots it more off the top of his forehead. Similar release point to where Kuminga shoots it now. So I think that's where the comparison is. But again, with Kuminga, I would start with the hand placement and the wrist flexion. That's the starting point of it. The feet and the base look fine. And then possibly have him release it a beat early. I think that's the tweak because, you know, you look at these cats who shoot it off their chin and off their chest, Jaren Jackson Jr. and Trae Young. Those shooters, those low shooters that you see so often now, Killian Hayes, those are the guys you would say, hey, man, you need to shoot it a beat later in order to raise the release point. Kuminga, his release point is plenty high, but I think that sometimes why you see that jolt at the top of his release is the energy has traveled from his feet through his body to the top of the release, but the ball's still in his hand. And so then there's that extra jolt to actually let it go. He's wasted all the energy in his body from the jump shot, right? So I would say a beat earlier and then play with the hand placement and wrist flexion. So it's not that he can't get there, but as of right now, like if they're just going to keep letting him shoot it the way he's shooting it, it won't get there. And it also made me think how, you know, it's been much publicized how much the Warriors have spent on this new developmental staff, Mahovic, and we've already seen it pay dividends. You wonder, though, if one of the blind spots of the Warriors organization is an actual shooting specialist coach. When you've had the Splash Brothers for the last decade, maybe they've neglected that, right? They're like, well, we've got shooting, you know, like, let's focus on, you know, like, so I don't know if you want to get him a shot doctor or coach or something, but they can't just let it be what it is. And obviously it starts with him. He's got to be willing to change it. WNBA playoffs going on. Did you see the Ace twerking, that video that went viral? That was uncomfortable. That was uncomfortable. Big Asia Wilson. Now hear me out. She was Gideon with Ja and all that. But no, what I wanted to actually bring up as far as the women's game goes was Paige Beckers, the young star from UConn, unfortunately tore her ACL in the offseason in some sort of pickup game. So she's going to miss this next year at UConn. And then she announced that she'll stay. She's going to play not next year, the year after that, when she is eligible to be in the WNBA. And here's the thing that's interesting. This new deal that allows these college athletes to get paid, it's more lucrative to stay in school for the women. And it will be for plenty of, I'm sure, college quarterbacks and certain male athletes. But for the women, Paige is going to make more at UConn these next few years than she will make in the WNBA. So that's some backwards weird shit. You're going to have these girls, now women, be like 25 years old before they come out of college. So it's a weird dichotomy that's forming here with women's basketball. But I think all in all, it's good. They got to get paid, right? Because make it now before you're getting paid peanuts in the WNBA. I was just thinking, you look at like Diana Taurasi, who just called it quits for the Storm. Was it Sue Bird or somebody like that? I'm not super into all these players, but I keep an eye on it for my daughter. She just retired. These women are playing till they're 40 because they're not getting paid enough. They're getting paid like a fucking dental assistant. And so they've got to play till they're 40. And it sucks that they missed out on the opportunity probably to make the most money in their career is going to be in college moving forward. I got two good mailbag questions for y'all today.
Hey, Uncle Al, this is Kendrick, or Creative Kendrick from the Discord. I think I have a pretty fun question for you, kind of lighthearted and a fun basketball-related question, of course. What is the one aspect of your basketball game that you wish you could have always expanded, that you want, like one aspect that you really didn't like that you wish you could have just got better at, and something that you've always wished that if I would master this skill, aspect of my game, it would have made me such a better basketball player. And second question is, what is the most underappreciated, overlooked skill set in the NBA right now that if more players learned it, it would drastically change their game and how they're viewed as a player? Thank you for all your content and have a blessed one.
Kendrick always comes through with good questions. For me, in my game, it was using my body offensively. By the time I was 25, like I had hit the weights and really increased my athleticism, I'm a good, you know, I'm like 6'2" and a half barefoot, right? So like if I'm in some shoes and, you know, you could call me 6'4", 190 some pounds, right? Like lean, big frame. And I just didn't, as I got bigger and stronger, my game was too finesse, man. If I felt resistance getting downhill, 9 out of 10 times I'm stepping back or pulling up into a jumper. But it also made me a really good pull-up jump shooter, right? But I didn't take advantage of my bigger frame, my relatively bigger frame, like playing pickup in men's leagues, where I should have been more physical offensively, putting my shoulder down and getting to the cup. It would have made my game more dynamic. It's interesting because defensively, man, I was like, a lot of the time what happened with me was I had to guard bigs. I'd get on a men's league or whatever, right? And it was like, I'm the tallest guy. So I got to guard some dude that's around my height, but 250. So I had to get really physical as a defender. And I think it also maybe speaks to my mentality. I'm someone who I hated getting scored on more than I liked scoring. So like I had no problem being physical as a defender, but offensively, you know, I was a finesse guy. I was a finesse guy. I could get up and bounce and play above the rim, but I wasn't like going to go up and go through someone's chest. No. But at the same time, that's why I got both my knees today. So I definitely wish that I would have learned to be more physical on the offensive end. And then I played too fast. I was fast, and so I played fast. And as I've gotten older now, I've realized how effective change of pace can be. As for the unappreciated skill set in today's game, I would say it's what the Splash Brothers do. It's shooting on the move off of screens. Redick, Korver come to mind, but Steph and Clay, right? I'm not saying you got to do it at their level, but do it well enough that, you know, teams will call sets for you. You're shooting it at a respectable percentage. And I think it's in part why a lot of these players don't move off the ball as much as we'd like to see them, because they're just not comfortable coming off a screen and shooting with no dribble or one dribble at the most, right? Maybe crab dribble to set your feet or just no dribble, curl off, bang. It's really probably just a symptom of AAU. You know, I've been going to these tournaments for my daughter, and there's usually boys and girls at these tournaments. It's so much of a showcase, man. It's not really about winning. It's more like, okay, you go, I go. You got all these parents with cameras and people trying to showcase their kid, and it's just this ISO, you go, I go. Let's take the finals for an example. Imagine if Tatum and Brown had that in their game, where they were curling off screens and just shooting. I don't mean standing still on the weak side. All guys do that, right? I mean on the move, popping jumpers. Damian Lee kind of has it in his game a little bit, right? But that would have drastically changed the finals. It makes things so much more different. How about the young DeAndre Hunter in Atlanta? If he was moving and popping off screens and popping jumpers rather than just standing in the corner. So yeah, I think the ability to shoot on the move and to shoot with one dribble or less would drastically change a lot of these guys' games and allow them to fit into better systems and alongside more players. Appreciate you, Kendrick. All right, we got one more.
Hey, Al, big fan. I just kind of wanted to address two birds with one stone kind of situation. Wiggins, Poole, and Draymond all wanting the max, and Kuminga kind of being a hothead, and, you know, Wiseman still being up in the air if he still has, you know, the right mentality. I was thinking that, you know, with also the Magic kind of saying they wanted to go after Poole, I was thinking that, you know, if we can't pay him all the max, what if we send Poole to the Magic with Kuminga and Wiseman? It'll allow us to, you know, pay Wiggins and Draymond the money they want, because in the long run, they're probably going to be a little bit more valuable. And then in return, the Magic sends us Wendell Carter Jr., Jalen Suggs, who kind of doesn't seem to be working out entirely for them and their 23 first round pick. I think that's a fair trade. They're getting a lot of talent in return and we're giving up a lot, but at least they're going to give us something, you know, a starting center in Wendell, who's a rim protector and can shoot the three a little bit. And, you know, is a 6'10", can, you know, run the court. Let me know what you think and keep up the good work.
Ben, I think Dub Nation would riot if we traded all three of those guys, right? Kuminga, Wiseman, and Poole. Those are the three, with respect to Moody, right? Moody's just not as exciting, right? You know, like I'm very high on Moody. Don't get me wrong. But, right, Kuminga, Wiseman, and Poole, the future. We all love potential in young guys because of what they could possibly be. That would be crazy, man. And, you know, it's my belief, if you read between the lines and you just, if you listen to everything Lacob says, he'd rather keep the young core than Draymond. Now, how does that play out? The leverage of Steph and Clay. You know, you wonder what Jonathan Isaac looks like for Orlando. It's been 2 years since the ACL. He had the weird MAGA non-vax thing. He's a weird dude, right? But I think he might, if he's healthy, he might be a guy they'd be more interested than Wendell Carter, who I like him offensively. I'm not sure how good he is defensively. I think he's a little plodding. He doesn't have quick feet, but he definitely could contribute right now. And then the thing with Suggs is his durability. I said it coming out. We all watched him at Gonzaga. That football mentality that everybody praised him for. Well, what did he play, like 40 games last year? So, you know, Cole Anthony, right? I guess the point I'm bringing up is that's definitely a team where there could be a potential deal because they have so many young players. Yeah, in their first round. It makes sense for them. I don't know, man. I think that that's quite a haul for Suggs, Carter. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd want some different players. I don't know if I'd want those players, but I see what you're getting at with the framework. It's interesting, too, because my guy on Twitter, BG, he asked me if I would have taken Franz Wagner over Kuminga. Mind you, he went 8th, the pick after Kuminga. At the time, no. No. I remember it was draft day, and there started to some rumors started to come out. Oh, the Warriors have interest in him too. And you know, this, that. I didn't do a full scouting report on him, but I was comfortable with them taking him because of the archetype. Right now, if you asked me, I'd probably take Wagner over Kuminga. And that has to do with, I think myself personally, I'm a little more short-sighted right now. Now that we've climbed back atop, right? And Steph is Steph still, you know, is. And that's why I say right now, like Kuminga's ceiling is higher. There's no doubt. But for the next 2 or 3 years, Franz probably would help us more. So I don't think Lacob ultimately wants to get rid of all the youth like that in one fellow swoop. Now, you're bringing in some other younger players. But again, the teams, fan bases, front offices, they tend to get a little attached to the guys that they've picked, right? The last thing I'll say on the Warriors is, last night, an article was released with Steph in Rolling Stone. And the headline is, they talked about trading for KD and how Steph said he loves him. He's a great dude. He's just misunderstood. And hell yeah, he would love to play with KD again. Is Steph laying down the groundwork right now? He's laying down the optics for Kevin's ego. You know, let's just say he kind of just takes every little opportunity here the first couple months of the season here up into the trade deadline. Like, yeah, man, KD and Dream, they all kind of just show love, shoot him little big ups when they can, right? Laying down that groundwork that the optics are, no. KD didn't come back to the Warriors with his tail tucked. The Warriors went and pursued him again. They wanted him back and welcomed him with open arms. I think Steph's being honest, but I don't think it was by mistake. I think that, again, perhaps they're laying the optics for a deal at the deadline. I don't know. Like we just talked about trading all three of those young guys. If you're going to do that, it's for someone like KD, right? It's not for Jalen Suggs and Wendell Carter. But I think they were truthful, telling, interesting comments from Steph in that Rolling Stone article. And last but not least, the fucking 49ers, man. Damn. A lot of people are blaming the defense for giving up 19 straight points against really an inept offense. obviously field conditions, rain, and all that. That's not really how I saw it. I thought the defense really put us in position to have much bigger of a lead in that first half. They were playing with a short field the entire first half. The offense was starting at like the 40 and the 50, and they weren't able to convert and build a cushion. I think to think that that defense was going to hold stout in those conditions against a quarterback in Justin Fields, who is the fastest quarterback in the league by the measurements, you knew he was going to break something, and it was two broken plays that resulted in that, and then it got away from it. I don't think it was the defense's problem. Hufanga looked good. The line looked good. The DBs held up their own. Now, the penalties, and that's got to go to the coaching staff and the discipline, man. Were they the second or third most penalized teams a year ago, right? This is just an ongoing theme. My cousin had texted me, he was talking shit about Trey, and you know. But the thing was, if you look at the numbers today, you're like, oh damn, he was like 40-something percent, right? But I thought he was kind of impressive. And you know, I've been down on him. Like, I'm not someone who's just like banging on this Trey drum, like, oh, he's gonna be the one. We just don't know, right? But he was more accurate than I thought. You know, the one thing that I think he showed was anticipation on some of those throws. He hits guys in stride. It may not be a spiral, a pretty ball, but it's in the vicinity and it's on time for the most part. He wasn't late. Now, he did the pick late, you know, he had to force things. Even that pick was low. It wasn't like some ball that sailed on him, right? And then you look at just how wiggly and elusive he is in the pocket. I thought he showed toughness and composure given the circumstances. When he does run, he's kind of plotting, right? Like he runs like he's ready to take on tackles. He's not a strider. He doesn't stride to the sideline. And so he's not going to be some explosive runner. But at the same time, I think that that's what makes him so wiggly. He's constantly shifting his weight left to right. He's not in stride where some big hits are just unavoidable. I think he's able to kind of like roll with the punches and take the hits. And so I thought his pocket presence and his composure were exciting to see. But for me, ultimately, I'm just tired of Kyle's style of play, man. I really am. I understand the concept of pound the run, strong defense, fine. But at certain points, you've got to put your talent in space and take shots outside and down the field, particularly in the red zone and in the end zone. You notice the Niners don't ever throw the football into the end zone. Now, I'm not talking about like a 40-yard bomb that has a low percentage, but when it's like second down on the 15-yard line, you're on the goal line, right? Throw a back pylon fade. Put Debo out in space. Put Ayuk out in space. Let your talent win some of those matchups. And it feels like Kyle, his ego and his rigidness, he just wants everything to be part of the scheme. No, sometimes just let your talent win out, dude. And so I'm frustrated with the offense and Kyle's rigidness with it. The weather played, you know, when Debo fumbled that ball early, I was like, that's a recipe right there. That's a recipe. But it really should have been like 17-0 at the half. Eventually, yeah, the defense folded. But I thought the defense showed they are who we thought they were. But eventually Fields is going to, you know, he's going to make something happen. There was some two broken plays, essentially. So now a must win in the home opener against Seattle. We'll see what they look like. And again, maybe I'll do a few Niner breakdowns before the Warriors season hits. But it definitely was not going to be what happened yesterday at Soldier Field, because I don't think any Niner fan wants to relive watching that bullshit. But I thought there was some positives from Trey, his composure. He threw the ball better than I thought he would in those elements for most of the game. Hufanga looking like a Pro Bowler out there, but penalties killed him. And then it was just a perfect storm, pun intended. Niners 0-1 against who many believe one of the worst teams in the NFL. All right, I'm going to wrap this high volume shooter up. Late in the week, you can expect part 2 of this new signature series around the NBA. I'm out, y'all.